Into the air to center field. Damon going back to the warning track. It's over his head and the Mets win it. David Wright with a walk-off hit in the bottom of the ninth off Mariano Rivera.
Ooh, a little broken bat and...
Oh, David Wright! What a play!
Oh,
are you kidding?
And everybody playing very deep as Wright hits one deep to left field. Headley back near the wall. It's out of here! The Mets win the ball game! David Wright with a two-out, two-run walk-off home run in the bottom of the ninth. Into the air to deep left field. Back goes Headley looking up. And it's out of here! David Wright ties the game with a three-run homer. New Apple, say hello to Citi Field. The first Met home run of their new home. Little dribbler. That might be it. Alvarez with the throw. Skips on by. Murphy to third. Backed up by Presley. Murphy's going to try and score, and he'll come home without a throw. 2-0 New York, and we'll wait to see how they score it for Wright. And it is a base hit. And so with that infield single, David Wright is now the Mets' all-time hits leader. Career hit number 1,419. He hits one to deep left field. That is gone! David Wright brings himself back into the lineup with thunder.
And it's in there, strike three called. The Mets win the pennant. The New York Mets have won the National League pennant.
Thank you from the bottom of my heart for accepting me. Thank you for cheering for me. And thank you for allowing me to live out my dream in front of you guys each and every single night. Thank you very much.
We're back, and like I said in the open, he's my team historian. I've known Greg now. It's funny. I've almost known him 20 years. I'm starting to feel really old, Greg. I remember the days in 2007 when all of us original – well, you're the OG Mets blogger, but I kind of came in there and towards the end of the first wave, and we were at various events watching the 2007 Mets and David Wright. And what an incredible weekend to see David 20 years later almost get his day in the sun. Get his number retired, and I thought no better person to talk about this than you. And welcome to the program. I know you were in the building yesterday. Talk about the event. It was a beautiful day. I know the outcome wasn't beautiful. I know the game left much to be desired, but I thought it was a tremendous performance by the Mets. A packed house, great weather. Couldn't ask for more than a W, the way I look at it.
Yeah, if you need a barometer for feeling old, we just retired David Wright's number.
That's right. So it's amazing. It's like, I remember, talking to you and God rest his soul, Dana Brand, you guys going to those games down the stretch in 07. And, you know, us all with the late Shannon Ford, you know, doing our thing at Citi Field not too long ago. And yeah, it does make me feel kind of old. Time flies when you're having fun, right?
Yeah, not that long ago tends to take on different connotations the older you get, trust me. But, you know, this day was coming. This day was inevitable. Really, I believe from that period that you were just describing when David Wright was in what I think the Irish call his pomp when he was younger and coming up the ranks and becoming known not just in the metropolitan area, but in the baseball loving nation as a whole, becoming it might be a little much to say becoming a god to us Mets fans, but way the hell up there and a superstar to the rest of baseball. And now, yeah, we turn around and 21 years since his debut and 19 years since his first All-Star game. And we could count a lot of things. He's long retired. Sound like Harry Chapin here. I'm long retired. My son's moved away, but he's not that far gone. His number is retired. His plaque is in the Met Hall of Fame. I think it's something we all saw happening for him and for us for a long time. and it has happened. And yes, it was a marvelous ceremony, and the love and excitement at Citi Field was appropriate to the subject of our affections.
And I think what I liked about David is that I know that it is, you know, when Mays and Hernandez and Strawberry, their numbers were retired, and even to a certain degree Piazza a few years ago, it wasn't the most inclusive to every part of the fan base because some people never watched those guys. Amazing to a guy like me. How could you not see Mike Piazza, right? But they haven't. I mean, if you're 25 years old, you didn't watch Mike Piazza for them. You know, let's face it, maybe at the end or something like that. Very, very, very young. David is maybe the first ceremony that crosses over fans like you, fans like me, fans like our good buddy from Crane Pool Society, Steve Keen, and again, like, God rest his soul, Dana Brand. I always talk about Dana in his book, Mets fan. You know, guys like that that watch the team from the beginning. And I think that's cool because I think what I've noticed a lot over the last few years, there is a divide in Mets fans. There's the younger Mets fans. And it's amazing to me, when I started this show, I'd bring old Mets on and everybody loved the segments. Now I get people sending me emails. I really don't want to hear from anybody in the 90s. I don't want to hear from anybody in this. Like, get over it. Move on. Because, I mean, there's a recency bias. But I feel David and that team, and you wrote about that team in one of your books, the 2015 team, transcends a lot of different Mets generations and brings us more together as a fan base. Because let's face it, this fan base is not always together on a lot of things. Let's you know, it's one big dysfunctional family. Let's call it like it is.
Well, David Wright is a through line for Mets fans because he played for so long. Because if you weren't watching in 2004 and 2005, if you only came along in 2010, if you only came along in 2015, David Wright was there through all of that. So there's no mystery. I mean, again, if you're a Mets fan who came along in 2019, you might say, what's all the fuss about? I never saw him, but I think you can allow a little grace period for fans of all ages. This speaks well to the fact that the Mets went ahead and got this done in a reasonable period of time after he stopped playing baseball. I don't know what the negotiations were like, so to speak, what the timing was agreed to, that it should be in 2025 rather than in, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it could have taken place the Sunday afternoon after the Saturday night that he played his last game. But, you know, a David Wright needs time to adjust his family's schedule, whatever it was he was looking for. I mean, it occurred to me watching yesterday that this is a perfect time because he gets to bring his kids to Citi Field where they are conscious of what's going on. We remember, and we see it every Christmas when they show it on SNY in a loop. His daughter, who was, you know, a couple of years old, throwing out the first pitch, and the other daughter, who was, as Gary Cohn said yesterday, still in his mother's arms. And the son, who wasn't born yet. So now they're all of an age where they can remember this, probably. And his parents are around, which makes me really happy, because if you watch the SNY documentary about David Wright's life and career, you saw how important, how supportive they were in his story. And I saw up close yesterday how proud and how affected they were by all of this. And you know, I've been to every Met number retirement ceremony from Piazza forward, and I'm happy to say that that's a lot of them. Something we probably wouldn't have said in 2007, never would have dreamed in 2007. But one of the themes that has subtly run through most of them is, I wish my parents were here to see it. Daryl Strawberry missed his mother. Keith Hernandez looked up to heaven. I know they're looking down on me. Well, David Wright's parents were looking over at him from a couple of seats away, and that is fantastic in its own right. And yeah, the 42,000 or so who were in attendance, no doubt spanned the generations from people who were there in 1962 and 64 when the ballpark opened, and 69 and 73, the year where I came of age, and the 80s, the year where you came of age, and the 90s and the early 2000s, because we all love David Wright. We all know David Wright. And as long as we have remained Mets fans, we are hyper-conscious of David Wright, and we who were far older than David Wright were rooting for him just like anybody who, say, put his poster on their bedroom wall growing up. So, yeah, he is a uniting figure. I don't think he ever said anything to turn anybody off. And you can even see by the players who came back to surround him, players who were there when he was a rookie, players who were there when he won the pennant, players who were there when he was saying goodbye. It was just a warm family feeling. You talk about dysfunctional family, putting aside the game that they played afterwards, the family functioned just fine on Saturday.
And I look at Wright as maybe the last prospect that doesn't get the attention that we see today. Like, maybe there was those Baseball America fans that were like hardcore into it. And I remember when I started in the early years of the internet, there was all these like forums, the Mets Online fan forum, your blog, Fan Home, that would get deep in the weeds with prospects. But let's face it, I started hearing about David Wright in 2004, in early 2004. And I actually got tickets to a Trenton Thunder Binghamton Mets game sometime in, I think, early July or late June, because I wanted to see David. And he had already got promoted to Norfolk by that time. I think I wound up seeing Robbie Cano. Ironically enough, I got to see Robbie Cano. Who would have thunk it at that point? But you didn't really hear a lot about these guys. And I also know at that point, I was so hesitant about the hype of any prospect because I had lived through Generation K. I lived through Greg Jeffries. Unfortunately, I saw a lot of people forget Brian Cole, the late Brian Cole, who passed away in an accident, a tragic car accident in 2001 that I think really is an underrated part of why the Mets got off to a slow start in 01, part of it. I was always so tepid about getting deep into it. I also remember after he came up and had such a great start, that was at the beginning when jerseys became more widely available. And I'm like, do I really get a Wright jersey? I'd gotten a Rico Bronya jersey and they traded him. And I had to sell the Rico Bronya jersey on eBay. And I have it. And I still have my Jason Isringhausen jersey because he wound up signing it at a ball game in 99 before he got traded. I don't want to get rid of it. But, Jason Isringhausen turned out to be a good player, not with the Mets, not the player that we thought it was. So, and I wound up taking the chance of getting the jersey and now I have it. And, it's amazing how far we've come where Wright is talked about right before he gets called up. We hear about the draft process during the Wright Way, beautiful documentary, and about his journey in the minor leagues. Now we have this kid Voit, first round pick, sitting next to Gelbs in the stands on Friday night, and we're already figuring out, well, when is he going to debut? Such a different situation. Wright's like a last of a breed. But I said this to a lot of people that I was talking to personally. That's the benchmark of the Mets star. Like, if you want to talk about who's going to be the next David Wright, like, the way he did, not only did things on the field, off the field, how he came up, how he was really good to start, but he went through his adjustment period. A lot of people forget the errors early on, Greg, in 05. People forget, everybody talks glowingly about David. You and I were there firsthand during those collapses with the questions that were brought up about how clutch he is. We were there when there was talk of trading him and Jose Reyes when Sandy Alderson came in, because why would you hold on to these guys if you're going nowhere? It's glowing now, and everybody talks about it in positive, but he went through his garbage too, and he handled it. And I don't think we talked a lot about that, nor is that supposed to be the biggest part of the ceremony. But David Wright had a charmed early years, but it wasn't perfect. And I think people forget about that. And, we came through, and I think that's a primer for any Mets prospect who thinks they're going to come in and be the next face of the franchise. That's what you got to be. I mean, the closest guy you could talk about is maybe Pete Alonso now, right? Is that the closest we can say that to Wright? And he's not the same player, nor is he the same premium position player, but he's about as close as you could get at that point.
Yeah, Pete certainly broken through that ceiling of, here comes a Met prospect. I wonder how he will disappoint me. But I think what we learned with David Wright, certainly with hindsight, and I remember it kind of hit me when Mike Piazza came over. When we saw Mike Piazza as a Dodger, all we saw, and that was usually the postseason All-Star games, and when he played against us, it always felt like, oh, there goes Mike Piazza going 4-for-5 again. doing something incredible, and he's batting 362 and things like that. And then you're with a player as a fan on a day-to-day basis, and you see that not every day is 4 for 5. There are those over 4 days. There are those throws in the dirt in the case of David Wright. And, you know, he was, for all of his ability, like I said, a rookie. He was doing this for the first time. So it was perhaps a shorter growing process than other players have had, but that just, you know, speaks to that level of prospect that he was and deserved to be. You know, he had certainly, you know, had kind of a running start in terms of our consciousness in 2004. He had been in the futures game. He had gotten what attention there was. Again, you're right. It's not like today when there's just an entire industry accessible to all of us, whether we choose to dive in full force or we're just kind of curious. And yeah, Wright coming on the heels of Reyes, different types of players, different background in terms of one was drafted and one was signed internationally, but though they did kind of stand out in those days, because Generation K aside, the position player prospects weren't talked up all that much. Brian Cole met a tragic end before we could really get excited about him. In fact, David brought him up yesterday in his press conference. He was asked about, you know, why do you wear number 5? Why did you wear number 5? And he said he'd always worn number 4. He got to Binghamton and they had taken that up circulation in honor of Brian Cole. So, Mets history is full of the what ifs and what could have beens, but not so much at the end of the day, but at the end of a beautiful career, you know, we saw David Wright overcome all those things you mentioned, overcome the pop-up with a man on third and nobody out once, overcome the fact that he made some errors along the way and had some slumps that everybody does. But I think what really, you know, speaks to him and our affinity for him, our, as speaking for Mets fans in general, he stuck around. We never had a chance to regret him leaving. Nobody ever did make that trade to say, oh, well, we're not going anywhere. Well, one of the things that really hit me watching that documentary was, of course, there's going to be a lot of focus on 2006, beautiful year, 2015, beautiful year. So many of those years in between, even after the collapse, when at least they were in pennant races, was just a grind to be a part of as a fan. And yet David Wright, when he was healthy, which was most of the time, save for 2011 with the back injury and a couple of weeks in 2009, when he probably rushed back from getting hit in the head, out there all the time, producing. Yeah. And as every reporter reminds you, at his locker, win or lose, and being that guy. And you can't help but feel a magnetic pull to somebody like that. And I think that when you put all of that together for all the winning and the losing, I mean, I looked up what the Mets record was in games he played, and it's so appropriate. 792 wins, 793 losses. Just shy of
500. Yeah, 500.
And if you throw in the postseason, one game over 500 in the 06 yeah. and 15 each game.
No investment. I mean, baseball purgatory, basically a team because of off the field yeah. financial situations could not be invested in. David chose to stay. The Mets could have traded him, and they didn't. They could have traded Reyes. They didn't. One of the things I brought up during the week as I was doing some memories on my personal Substack was, what was when I knew he was elite? And everybody, I mean, David talks about getting the hit off of Rivera, you know, the barehanded catch, you know, his performance out of the gate and pretty much putting himself in the middle of the lineup pretty early in 2005 when Piazza was declining. But to me, it was, and you may remember it, during that 9-1 road trip, a double play off of Pat Burrell in Philadelphia. The Mets had a big lead. The Phillies were coming in. You know, in Citizens Bank Park with that team, you thought that was the 06 Phillies. They had the bones of that team that would become a rivalry. They would come in, leadoff walk, Billy Wagner on the mound, ground ball down the line, looked like it was headed for the corner. It would have been second and third, nobody out, and it looked like a blown save. And there's David Wright not only making the play, and I can't find a video of it on the internet. I don't think it was a diving play. It was more like he backed up, made the throw to second, I think it was, if that was the case, probably the second baseman, if it was Valentin or whoever, or Woodward, made the throw to first to complete the double play and Burrell. Mets go on, you know, to win the game. Actually, Ryan Howard got a hit right after that. I was looking at the box score, and that probably would have tied the ball game. I said, wow, that's on the road, raucous crowd, a team that's trying to, like, stay in the race for the division. And then a day later, the Mets would sweep the Phillies and basically end the National League East. That whole, like, 90-day period from April to about the 4th of July when the Mets got off to that hot start in 2006, I'd be like, all right, he's elite. He's good. Reyes is good. Beltran's good. You know, we knew Beltran's good, but these two kids, and that's kind of what I solidified. And then you look at, you know, Reyes and Wright celebrating in 06, and I can remember it like it's yesterday. I remember the division. I remember beating the Dodgers. I remember the pain of Game 7. And, you know, like David said, you know, you think it's just going to happen every year. And I don't care what analytics or team building says. When you have an opportunity to do something special, take advantage of it, because look at this. It's 2025, and it goes by quick. It's gone. But that was kind of like my memory of, like, David Wright's elite. Like, he's good. Yeah. Like, he ain't going. This jersey I bought, I didn't waste my money on. It's not going on eBay now, you know? So that's my first memory. I don't know if you have one, but that was mine.
Well, one of the articles of faith for fans who were alive and well in the 1980s was, oh, if only the wild card existed. Well, three wild cards existed the way they do now, circa 2007, 2008. We wouldn't remember collapses. We would just remember, oh, our playoff seeding got away from us, so we had to be the sixth seed instead of the three seed or whatever. No, there's one night that stays with me that precedes 06 that really told me something. It was a game in August of 2005. The Mets are on the road in San Francisco. Excuse me. And Steve Traxel, who'd been out most of the year, was coming back to make his, I believe, his first start of the year. And he was dueling, I want to say, Jason Schmidt. And David Wright hits a solo home run, and the Mets make it hold up 1-0.
I remember that thinking, first inning home run, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. And I remember thinking, you know, we've been in so many games my life where the difference was Mike Schmidt did something, or Albert Pujols did something, or Dave Parker did something. You know, there was a superstar in the other team that was the difference. No matter how good our pitching was, we would lose a game like that. And I said, you know what? We have one of those players now. He'd been up for a little more than a year at that point, had already been building his numbers, getting better every day defensively, all of those things. But now I felt like I was watching a young superstar, the likes of which, even when we had them, and there weren't too many before him, there was just so much of that. Yeah, maybe Darryl Strawberry's going to hit an amazing home run, but he's also probably going to strike out three times tonight in his early years. David Wright felt like he was accelerated beyond that. And that is kind of the night, combined with, you know, the fact that he drove in 100 runs that year. And that was also the year where Reyes was healthy for the first time. And we saw the full Reyes that really blossomed during that road trip you were talking about. So that 05, 06 period, which, you know, before the Mets go on and clinch the division, culminates when they're both elected to the All-Star team. Like, everybody got it. These were the guys to get behind in the National League. And of course, you think to yourself, well, this is just going to go on for the next 10 years or whatever. And it went on for a little while. And Wright certainly, you know, hung around, not did more than hang around, continued to succeed. But there was that moment where it felt, if you put together these young players and these free agents we signed, these trades we made, the fact that we suddenly had a network devoted to showing our games, and they're building this, you know, for better or worse. Hey,
it was transformative times. It was transformative times.
Yeah, like, and nobody had ever heard of Bernie Madoff. So put it all together, this was the golden era in its gestation phase, and, you know, maybe it never quite bloomed the way we wanted it to, but it was a beautiful time to be alive and be a Mets fan. And, you know, I'm good with the fact that when we talk about David Wright's career, that other than the kind of the coda of 2015 and the comeback to say goodbye in 2018, that we mostly talk about young David Wright doing all of those things and living up to his promise, and then every now and then building up his resume and holding all these records that he holds within the franchise. I think it's a pretty accurate picture. And the fact that he had the maturity within him to grow into that kind of leader that everybody reveres, all while he was in his 20s. So it's, like I said, Saturday was a day that, whatever date it was going to be, it was marked on all our calendars for a long time.
And I think another lesson, and I think we all could really think about this, all of us, and I always encourage the fans that get caught up in the now. I don't think, you look at 2007, you look at David, his best season of his best season, if you go on and just use baseball reference, WAR. We could argue Beltran's 06, Strawberry this, Pete that, Lindor that. We could argue all that, as fans. But baseball reference says 07, right? Best offensive season in Mets history. I should say offense, WAR. Best season in Mets history. And the team collapsed, and a lot of the blame went to Wright and Reyes and Beltran and, the radio waves, and we were there for it. And the reason that team didn't win, and I've spoken to people that were on that team, is the pitching wasn't good enough. The pitching failed them down the stretch. And one member of the coaching staff said he didn't think they were even should have been independent race. That's how he felt they were very fortunate to even be in a position. Now, David disagrees. If you listen to him on the documentary, he actually felt the team the following year was lucky to be in the position that it is. But appreciate what's in front of you. What you saw specifically with Wright, was Eddie Matthews. Was Ken Boyer. Was Chipper Jones. We just didn't realize it. Yeah. And he would have been a Hall of Famer. I think there's a debate as the Hall becomes the Hall of Very Good that you could make an argument for him. I'm not that guy. I don't like to just lower the bar. There are positions in the Hall of Fame that are lacking. Third base is one of them. But I don't think we fully, as a fan base, and you and I lived it, so I think we're a good barometer. Maybe you did. I feel I could have, because we were so caught up in Omar this and Adam Rubin that and Tony Bernazar this, and they got to get up out of the pitcher, and oh, what did Willie do now, and Jerry Manuel's a dope, and oh, now Terry Collins is in, and oh, Sandy Alderson and Bernie made, yeah, we could say it was the owner, yeah, but even now with a good owner, you see some of that crop up. And I think that's the thing that I guess you're never going to change. We never live in the moment. And then 20 years later, we're here lionizing David. I'm like, some of you guys weren't so lionizing of him 20 years ago, if I remember. But that's just my little rant at the clouds, I guess, at that point.
Well, baseball is a lot of fun to people like us. And one of the reasons is it gets us thinking, it gets us talking. Inevitably, it gets us arguing, because what do you mean you don't see the world the way I do? I'd like to think I've learned through the years to tune a lot of that stuff out. I stopped listening to WFAN a long time ago.
Well, that's smart.
And I don't get into online arguments. If I see something I don't agree with, enjoy your life. What do I care what you think?
Yep.
Put out what I'm thinking. I write probably, a little more than every other game, based on the way my partner Jason Fry and I divide Faith and Fear and Flushing. And I just never really want to get caught up in those contretemps of the moment. Some of them you can't ignore, but a lot of it is just so fleeting. You learn to recognize what pitches to let go by, to use a baseball term. Listen, no batter bats 1,000. No pitcher has an ERA of 0.00. Not even Aaron Loop a few years ago. He practically did. But David Wright, yeah, had bad games, maybe even one or two down the stretch. Had a lot of really good games in 2007. David Wright didn't play all nine positions, unfortunately. So I would have taken my chances with a team of David Wrights, as it were. But again, it happened. 06 happened, 07 happened, the middling and less years happened. You should be able, if you want to be a fan who really loved your team, I'm not going to tell people how to love the Mets, but I think if you want to feel good about your team in retrospect, you just say, yeah, I do remember what it was like on a daily basis. And there were days that, that time he popped up or whatever, but I think it's best to look at the big picture, and the big picture is very kind to David Wright, much as David Wright was very kind to us.
I don't think people understand how, and hopefully they do now after watching that documentary. While we were watching this wild, you know, I always compare 2015, and you wrote the book about it. 2015 Mets are like you and I sleeping, and all of a sudden at 3 o'clock in the morning, I knock on your door, I wake you up, and go, yo, let's go on like this wild road trip. And then we don't know where we're going. We don't have any plan. This was not supposed to be our night. It's like the baseball version of Howard and Kumar go to White Castle, right? Is that there I am, no, dating myself. And all of a sudden, August 1st, they play 700 baseball. They beat the Dodgers. They beat the Cubs, who nope, they're not supposed to beat. That was the Cubs' summer of love, like the Mets 06. And, you know, bad bounces in a World Series wasn't meant to be. We could argue that. I don't want to make this negative. It is what it is, the 20. But Wright works his way back from an injury that, by all intent purposes, once you Google it, and I remember Googling it that spring day when I heard he had spinal stenosis, he's done. He could take his contract. He could try to do whatever kind of, like, commitments he needs to make to not retire and lose his contract. The Mets could get their insurance money. You know, he put his body, and I know we got paid handsomely for it. I know what people are going to say. But, you know, there's a lot of money, and then there's your health. And your health, being crippled, doesn't matter if you have millions of dollars in the bank. You still have to live your life and be miserable. And he put his body on the line. And he came back, and maybe he wasn't vintage David Wright, but Greg, you, and I think people forget, not just the home run in Philadelphia, but how he played in September. The big game he had, or the big hit he had against the Dodgers in game one. Yes, he wasn't the same fielder. Yes, his arm, his noodle arm, because of the rotator cuff, because of the back, was why the Royals scored that run in game five on the due to throw, part of it anyway. But he played and he came in. And I don't know if they get where they – I don't think they won a pennant without him. I'm not saying they couldn't have won the division. They were in a good space. But they needed that bat. They were a team that was probably still a little bit short offensively. And I think his presence also gave them that confidence that they could put the finishing touches on the Nats. And who can't forever? I mean, there's got to be someone with a photo of Wright pumping his fist in D.C. on Labor Day. When I knew that day is the day I knew, I go, the Mets are going to win this division. Like, I wasn't sure because I was still like, the Nats are good. All summer I kept saying, the Nats are too good. The Nats are too good. The Nats are going to go on a 28 run. And it was almost like what the Mets did to the Nats that summer is what the Phils did to the Mets in 07. You don't want it? The hell with this. I'll take it. And all of a sudden the Nats look up like, whoa, 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 whoa. You're not supposed to win. Well, this is mine now. And then they scramble and no. This is mine. And David was a part of that. And that's big, you know, and I always remember that. I always admire that. And I know that he tried to, you know, turn 2016 into his last hurrah. But the clock was ticking. But I talked about that being like that Vin Scully, one last day of sun, of baseball summer. Like he says, I love for the love of the game, how he, that whole drama of the broken down athlete that Kevin Costner plays so well. And that was David Wright giving you that one last day of summer. We just didn't know it at the time.
Yeah, David Wright pushed as far as he could in 16. And who's to say the Mets of September 2016, who put on that fantastic rush to win a wild card, are in position to get there if not for David Wright hitting a bunch of home runs early that year. He was part of that attack. But just to set it back to 2015, I mean, that was a season where a lot didn't go right. And we can certainly, you know, call up the box score of the lineup that Terry Collins sent out to face Clayton Kershaw, where Bartolo Colon didn't even have the lowest batting average of the nine batters. And, you know, that is what the Mets were like before going out and getting Cespedes, let alone Kelly Johnson and Juan Uribe, and calling up Michael Conforto. But, you know, the idea of, you know, they wouldn't have won it without Wright. I can't imagine a Met team of that period, even with 4 months on the shelf, and by the shelf, I mean working his ass off to get back. I can't imagine a Met team of that era not being with David Wright, and David Wright not being a part of all that. It was always his, you know, again, whatever he got paid, he took his job seriously and made it sure that if he could physically at all contribute, he was going to, and he was too good a player, even in a diminished capacity, to not have an impact. And, you know, the default answer for what is the greatest memory you have of David Wright, if it's game three of the World Series where he hits a home run at Citi Field, that's appropriate because suddenly he is the old man at, what was he in real life, 32 years old.
Yeah.
But,
and he still looks so good. Like, for a guy that has a serious back issue, he looks so young. I mean, he looks like he could play. And his weight is down. You could see his weight. He's not as bulky as he was. But I mean, he's 45 now.
He's
42. He's 42. Like, he probably wouldn't be playing, but there are guys that could play to 39. Sure. I mean, he should have been on this roster probably to at least 2018, 2019. I think his contract was up in 2020. He should have been on the roster.
He's still younger than Julio Franco was when Julio Franco was on.
Right. I don't know. Now, would Wright, with a family, you heard his wife talk about it. Would he want to just, do that? There's the guys at the end of the day that, like, family and I made my money and my life is more than baseball. I get that. Fans forget that. Yeah. But it's hard. You gotta, like, you realize once you let it go, it's not something you could just, like, 10 years from now go, oh, my kids are in high school. I could just, no, you can't go back. You're done at that point. So, Greg, I think the appropriate way to wrap this up is what's next. Like, the Mets have done an incredible job under the Cohens in catching up, between the Mets Hall of Fame, between the retired numbers. They've taken what was a dormant team that since the late 80s, even back then, because of the lovable loser moniker early in their existence, did not embrace their history. Almost was embarrassed because of their failures of the 80s, because of the losing early on, because of the issues of the 90s. Now they've gone full steam. They've made a lot of wrongs right. Willie Mays, Hernandez, Strawberry and Doc, which I'm a little surprised about with Strawberry and Doc, but I support it all. Is there one that's missing? I know that there's been talk about Gary Carter, and I was surprised to hear our good friend Anthony Rivera, somebody say that Doc Gooden was hesitant to say he's a number retiree. There's Jose Reyes, which I think is very complicated. On the field complicated, off the field complicated. I'm not sure that's one that is going to happen, and I'm not sure I support it. Forget the off the field, the on the field. I'm not so sure he was completely deserving of that. Maybe obviously a very good player. The numbers on the wall, those should not be candy. Those should not be Hall of Very Good. So do you have your eye on what's next? What is Greg Prince, who's been watching this team way longer than me, Faith and Fear and Flushing, which I'll tell you this, Faith and Fear and Flushing is like that store in the mall. Everything around it's changed. The world has gotten wacky. But you still have the same decor. You still have the cash register. You don't use a POS system. You ring things up by hand, and you still, and everybody loves it. Hey, I'm going. It's the deli in Brooklyn that still takes cash only, or something like that. That's what Faith and Fear and Flushing is in this crazy technological world. So, I threw a lot at you, but to wrap up here, what's next? And obviously, if someone's listening, they're not going to Faith and Fear and Flushing. Forget about it being, part of Mets OG independent media history. I mean, it's just good content. So what do you got?
Well, first, I've got to go oil the mimeograph machine.
Hey, listen, I know you for a long time. I've always admired your stick-to-itiveness to your who you are. And I wish sometimes I had some of that in my repertoire, but
as far as numbers go, I looked up yesterday. I took a walk in the stadium so I could get a better view of everything from Stengel to Wright, especially where the players were concerned. Seaver to Wright, with all love for Gary Carter, for Jose Reyes, for Carlos Beltran, should he go into the National Baseball Hall of Fame and say, I want to wear a Mets cap, for the memory of Ed Cranepool. Everybody who's been put out there as a possibility, and again, I'll leave active players out of it. I looked up at that row of numbers and who they represent, and I just feel, it's complete. I'm not saying I wouldn't embrace if next year they make a decision. I would. My policy, to sound self-important, is get behind these things when they happen, because there's no point in looking up at a player and saying, well, I don't think he's worthy of my reverence. Of course he is. Anybody to get to that point did a great deal for the Mets. And my hunch is that they are done for now. I could be wrong, but
I agree.
If you can rewind to 2016, it took Piazza getting into the Hall of Fame to get his number retired, even though we all knew it wasn't being worn again. It hadn't been worn again since 2005. And that's, you said, okay, Seaver and Piazza. Okay, is that going to be it forever? But they took a second look at Jerry Kuzman, which was not strange in terms of what Jerry Kuzman accomplished and what he meant to this franchise. It was strange because they waited forever. But it occurred to somebody or to enough people who make these decisions, if we wait any longer, and Jerry Kuzman won't be here to enjoy it. We wait any longer, Willie Mays, who can't make it here because he's in his 90s, won't know about it. Why? What are we waiting for with Keith Hernandez? Keith Hernandez is Keith Hernandez. Daryl and Doc, I think that was kind of in that backlog feeling of these are two of the greatest people we ever had, two of the greatest players we ever had, most impactful players. So, and then David Wright, who we've been saying all along here is we knew this was coming. So now they've got it taken care of. There's nobody, again, you can't. I have a friend who just worships Gary Carter, and I would love for a Gary Carter day and a number eight to happen because of my fondness for this person. But I can also see the very pedestrian arguments. 5 years is a myth, two super impactful years, then kind of a fall off. Still, he's Gary Carter. He's in the Hall of Fame. The team he went into the Hall of Fame with no longer exists, which isn't his fault. And we miss him terribly if we were around in 1986. Carlos Beltran, perhaps the most talented player they ever had, perhaps the most productive player in the span of years that he had. I wouldn't argue with any of them happening. I love Jose Reyes. Yeah, I refer to him as my last favorite player because I just don't have favorite players anymore at the stage of my life. But he was the last one, and him.
You
and
sure you're gonna? You're never gonna have a favorite player?
Oh, again? I don't know. Could happen tomorrow. I
mean, it could happen.
I get excited about a player for a few.
You're
weeks.
You're getting at an age where it's, and I think,
yeah,
you're like
it's
me.
It's not the same.
I mean, it's about the team now. It's. Yeah, I really feel.
I grew up idolizing Tom Seaver, and I transitioned into idolizing Dwight Gooden, who was the same age I was, and. Mm-hmm. Idolizing didn't seem like the right word, but my Edgardo Alfonso, after a brief flirtation with Rico Bronya, because he didn't stay around long enough, Edgardo Alfonso became that guy to me, and then Reyes became that guy for me after Fonzie. And after Reyes, for all the off-field issues and everything else, I just don't have it in me to suddenly, you know, again, for a few months, I'll get very excited about Jose Quintana. A few years ago, Jose Peraza was my favorite for about
10 years.
Juan Lagares when he was first making great catches, but it's not the same. But with all that said about my adoration for Jose Reyes, the Met, and that I think he was step for step every bit as important in the prime of those Mets as David Wright, I understand if he's not, if number seven doesn't go up there. They gave out number seven this year. The only thing I really thought before Ed Cranepool died was maybe you do seven for the two of them because they had taken seven out of circulation. But I think the fact that they gave seven to Brett Beatty is their way of saying, okay,
not going to happen.
Yeah. We have a patch for Ed Cranepool. Ed Cranepool's not here to enjoy it. And I think Gary Carter's not here to enjoy it. It doesn't mean you don't do things for the historical record, but I think there is something to that. If back in 2003, when the Hall of Fame decided they were taking the decision out of players' hands vis-a-vis the hat on the plaque, and Gary Carter had gone in as a Met, I think number eight would have been retired then because they haven't given it out since then. But I can, again, you know, we go again, this is the fun of baseball, going round and around on this, but just in terms of what's going to happen next, I think what's going to happen next is we're going to enjoy looking up at number five next to right next to 18 and 16 and 24 and 17 and 36 and 31. And to use your phrase, the OG 41,
the OG
14
the
and
original.
37. Yeah.
Well, Greg, it's always a pleasure catching up with you. We got to do it again. Not just when there's a number retirement, because it might not be for a while. Enjoy the rest of the season. Hopefully there's a lot of fun baseball ahead of us. You know, in the midst of a pennant race, you could be in the doldrums of the summer. The Mets have a way of making things interesting and fun, even when they have the privilege of having an owner that spends money. Even though they have the finances of the Dodgers and of what the Yankees have had, They still have that roller coaster nature of being the Mets. So enjoy it. Thanks for joining us. Faith and Fear and Flushing. Check it out, and we'll talk again soon, my friend.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. Thanks, Greg. Have a great Sunday. Be well, buddy. That's Greg Prince, Faith and Fear and Flushing. Great stuff. Check it out. If you're a younger fan, maybe not into blogs, a little generic, just long-form writing at its best, and a good man, a good friend to me, always nice to me at the beginning. When I'll be honest with you, when I got into that blogosphere, not everybody was so nice to me, but some of that might have been my fault at times. But anyway, let's take a quick break, wrap up. Obviously, some news come across the wires. We're talking to Greg about the Phillies signing David Robertson. We'll wrap up about that and more right after this. All right, we're back. Final thoughts. Talking Mets podcast here. Love what Greg Prince has to offer. Faith and Fear and Flushing at Greg_Prince on X. Check him out. Not much left to say. Obviously, while we were on the air with Greg, the Phillies signed David Robertson. Big contract, $16 million. $16 million prorated, which would have cost, with 110% tax, about $12 million. A guy that, look, probably not going to be available for a couple of weeks, maybe till mid-August, September. Can't really blame the Mets for passing on him then. Can't blame Robertson for taking a nice payday for a couple of months of work after taking a big chunk of the season off to be at home. I think the Mets could do better than that for that price, so I'm not going to criticize them for that. But it does validate what I said in the open, that Dombrowski is going to be aggressive. It looks like Middleton and the Phillies are going to spend money. I think they feel this is their all-in moment. I think they feel the window's closing. They know the Mets are good. They know Steve Cohen's lurking. They know it's a tournament. And they know that they're, with their starting pitching, if they could get the bullpen straightened out, they're a very dangerous team in the tournament. You know, they have enough to win. They don't have to score a lot of runs when you got Zach Wheel on the mound for a couple of games. And look, Mets fans realize if Lindor doesn't have that grand slam at Citi Field in Game 4, you know, going back to Philly for Game 5 was a dicey proposition. So we all know what that means. As far as, the next steps for what, you know, the Mets will do, I agree with Greg, I don't think any numbers are being retired. I don't think Jose Reyes has the offensive numbers, nor do I think his off-the-field situation makes it appropriate. I think he's just getting himself back in the organization's good graces with what he's doing on SNY, Baseball Night in New York. Ed Cranepool, a lot of numbers, bit of a compiler, because he was with the Mets for so long, pre-free agency, when you were tied to a team. I know he passed. I had a chance to talk to Ed many years ago. I was supposed to talk to him about his book that he came out with a couple of years ago. We just never connected, which is a shame, because then he passed. You know, it goes to show you how time flies. And then as far as Gary Carter, you know, as someone who grew up, you know, Keith was always my favorite player. I almost feel like Gary came on after Keith and the Mets, after 84, after Keith got them out of the doldrums, after they were that one player short, and he was a big part of 85, and he certainly was a big part of 86. I mean, who could forget his two home run game at Fenway Park in Boston in the World Series and his big walk-off hit against Charlie Kerfield in the NLCS. But in some ways, there's a bit of ring shopping maybe that, you know, at that point, Gary was unhappy with Montreal. He wanted to win. He wanted to win a championship. He wanted to go where he could win a championship. So maybe they view it where he came on to the party last. I personally think he deserves it. I think he was just as part and important to what the Mets did in the 80s as Keith. He was co-captain with Keith in 1987. If he was good enough to be co-captain with Keith, he deserves the logo on the wall. After that, that's it. That's it for now. If you're going to be on the wall, if you're going to be up there on the top of the building, it's got to be special. And the only one right now that I see is special in that vein is Carter. Beltran, you know, that's also complicated too because of the sign stealing, the way he was fired from his Mets position. Certainly elite. I don't know if he's, you know, a Met enough. I know that he had, you know, his years with Kansas City. He obviously put in time in other places. The Mets traded him. Most of his career is with the Mets. I think it's a tad more Mets than Royals. I have to look at it. He probably goes into the Hall of Fame as a Met. Maybe if that happens, they retire his number. That's a more, you know, I'm not sure. It's like I said, I'm not sure. I'm very sure on Gary Carter. I'm not so sure on Carlos Beltran. As far as retired number, I mean, all of these guys, Reyes, Cotter, Beltre, they're Mets Hall of Famers. I mean, that's an easy one. So anyway, that's it. Pretty long show. Hope you enjoyed it. Not an easy show to do on a weekend where there's a lot going on with the pennant race, a lot of tough stuff going on the field with the Mets. Big win. Mets really needed the win. Let's see what they got going on with Anaheim. I think they really need to make some hay here and make up for losing the series against Cincinnati. They got a tough West Coast trip coming up. We're going to learn a lot about the Mets over the next week or so heading into the deadline. And the Phillies have thrown down the gauntlet. I'm not so sure Robertson is the same pitcher that deserves that kind of payday. I think he's a guy that's going to need a ramp-up period. But what the Phillies are telling you with the way they paid Robertson is that they're desperate for bullpen help. They're desperate to win, and they're going to put their chips to the center of the table, and they're going to put their money where their mouth is, and John Middleton's going to spend that tobacco money. So we'll see where that goes. All right, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to this latest edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike's still at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike's still at talkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, Talking Mets, no G, and I'd love for you to subscribe to the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on Fanside and Podcasting Network for supporting the show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Enjoy your week. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. Till then, take care, everybody.